Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 378. There is no box office report, so if you're used to the sequential teeter-totter of, like, movie box office, we're throwing you a curveball because I have to go out of town. I screwed it all up. So the movie of the week is Tully, and we have a guest with us, Len Venhouse. Hi, Len.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kevin.
I was going to say, is she not going to say hi to Kevin? Damn, shots fired.
I'm used to it.
It's already like, gloves are off. She's like, F you, Kevin. Why don't you tell people where you're from, just so you can kind of get that in their ears.
Well, I know you gentlemen from sitting in movie theaters with you.
Dark rooms for hours on end.
Yes.
Because you're my fellow film critic peeps. So that's how I know you. But actually, I interviewed Tom when he worked at a local radio station called The Rock.
Oh, that's
and
right.
I did the St. Louis radio report, and you and I had a mutual love of the Monkees.
That is true.
And we bonded.
Oh.
And you had hilarious stories.
Yes. The listeners know about my love for the Monkees.
It hasn't changed since then, Lynn. So.
I know. Well, nor should it. Yeah.
So typically what we do on a show is Joe gives us an in-depth synopsis. He uses his cop-like mind and, like, recreates the entire movie.
Well, that's why they call him the world's greatest detective.
Yeah. And so he's not here, and I suck at synopsis, and Kevin saw the movie like a year and a half ago.
And Lynn did too.
Yeah. So this one, for our regular listeners, might sound a little non-traditional because it won't be the most sequential recreation of the movie that we've ever done.
Unless
so.
Lynn has a memory like a steel trap.
I kind of do.
Well, we'll see.
She might be our synopsisizer, or at least correct us.
Yeah, she'll correct us a lot. So she's a teacher on the side, so she's good at correcting kids.
So I think a good place to start is with the Jason Reitman, Diablo Cody, Charlize Theron.
I was going to start with, so the plane is taking off over the Hudson, right? No?
I don't think so.
Wait. I thought we were seeing Sully.
No, it's the wrong one. Sorry. Yeah.
Tully.
I might not be able to help as much as I thought.
What's the screening company really needs to get their act together if they're showing Sully at this time.
I was wondering why she didn't have a mustache.
I've been a big fan of Jason Reitman, right? So since I saw Thank You for Smoking, I absolutely love it. One of my favorites. Then he did Juno. Then he did Up in the Air, which had a lot of filming in St. Louis.
Right.
Yes.
And so it was like 3 for 3. Jason Reitman on fire. First 3 films, fantastic. Then his fourth film was Young Adult, which had this same team of the writer, Diablo Cody, Jason Reitman, director, and Charlize Theron.
Now, I still haven't seen Young Adult.
Oh. You haven't seen it?
I've
so
not.
So underappreciated.
Now, you didn't like it, right, Kevin?
I hate it.
And
I love it.
And
A lot of people do.
I had a feeling there must be like, I know you don't like it. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I felt like a lot of people must have liked it because I noticed in the trailer for Tully, they said, like, from the team that brought you Juno and Young Adult. And I'm like, well, they're name checking a movie that was kind of like Wasn't the most well-reviewed film of his career.
No.
It's well-received by some. It's very polarizing. So I talked to some people at the screening because I'm like, all right, I haven't liked a Jason Reitman film in three or four films now. I mean, he did that Labor Day movie, which I still have PTSD over Josh Brolin making that pie.
Yeah, there's a scene
pie.
In this where she's making a pie, and I was like, uh-oh.
Exactly. And I was,
but it's a good pie.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was having flashbacks during the pie-making scene. I thought, oh, but that's neither here nor there. But this is the same team that did Young Adult. And so this was around, not to go into it too much, but this was around the time when the crude comedies were really, you know, making their way. Like you had the Judd Apatow stuff going on. You know, of course you have Kevin Smith stuff, which I love, which I feel is very natural. And then I think I've been used to Charlize Theron in such traditional roles, not like in Young Adult at least. And so it just rubbed me the wrong way. Like it was too forced. And that's why I didn't like it. It was too, not that it was too crude or vulgar, but coming out of her, I thought, no, it's just they're trying to be edgy. It's not working.
Gotcha.
She played a woman who didn't grow up, and she was stuck in a rut.
Gotcha.
And she goes back to hook up with her high school boyfriend, who's the hunky Patrick Wilson. And she has a random hookup with Patton Oswalt that is a hoot.
Yeah.
I think. Don't you remember that?
Yeah. I want to go back. I like Patton Oswalt. I like Charlize Theron. I obviously like Jason Reitman. It just didn't work for me. And so I was really worried going into this one because, you know, his track record as of late, even if you don't count the Young Adult, but you've got Labor Day, Men, Women, and Children.
Oh.
And yeah. And so
Men, Women, and Children, was that the Adam Sandler one?
Yes, with the Jennifer Garner and the parents. And it's so turgid. Oh, God.
It was very pretentious.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, so it was like 3 for 3, and then it was like 3 for 4 in my mind, 3 for 5, 3 for 6. So going into Tully, I'm like, well, I like these people separately, and I've liked them together in the past, but I didn't know what to expect. But so at least we know going into it, Lynn liked it, I didn't, Tom hasn't seen it. So it's a pretty even playing field as far as this team goes. But I mean, just to get impressions out of the way, I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was clever. I thought it was a lot deeper. I thought it was going to be maybe another young adult grown up movie, but still a little.
Well, it does sound like it's kind of flip side of the same coin. You have Young Adult, you describe as a movie about a woman who never grew up, stuck in a rut. And this is a movie about a woman who did grow up and kind of wishes she hadn't. And she's stuck in a rut.
Yes.
You know?
And it speaks the truth, I think. I think it's very raw and very real. And Charlize Theron, just think, last time we saw her, she was kicking butt in Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
She's one of the world's most beautiful women. And yet, you believe her schlepping around in a bathrobe being super frumpy.
Yeah.
I honestly, so when I saw it, because I saw it pretty early and they weren't doing a lot of news reports about it yet. It played at Sundance maybe or one of those festivals, but there weren't a lot of mainstream publications writing about it yet. And so I didn't get all the news articles about Charlize Theron gains 50 pounds for the role.
So she did legit gain the weight for this movie?
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't tell if it was like how much of it was how she carried herself or, you know, so she did like really get as big as she appears to be in some scenes in this movie.
Okay. And that's what I thought was impressive because I was watching it, and aside from her great acting and her slump that she's in and all that, the performance, I thought the look was so realistic as far as someone that's pregnant and you know, not someone that is a lot heavier than Charlize Theron. And so when I found that out, I was like, wow, that's some Christian Bale. You know, that's some real weight gain type.
De Niro.
Yeah, exactly. De Niro. you know, it's impressive.
So method.
Oh. Yeah.
But what's really great about this is because the three of them, they get it. Somebody, I think, must have had a baby. Not sure. And I should have looked it up. But it's so real about the rigors of infant. Taking care of an infant.
Well, I think it's great that we have you on the podcast. You have two children of your own, so you've been through this at least twice.
Yes.
And you know, I wanted to kind of get an input from you because as a father, I did recognize a lot of it, but of course I didn't have to deal with it as much as her character, Marlo, I believe is the main character's name. I didn't have to deal with it obviously as much as she did. And so the Ron Livingston character plays the husband, you know, he's a good dad. He's a hard worker. You know, he's good with the kids, but he doesn't have to do the mom stuff. And that's what they're kind of pointing out, is that, you know, it's a totally different thing.
I really enjoyed the fact that the movie didn't make the dad the villain.
Yes.
Like, it's it's so easy to be like, mom does all the work, dad doesn't do a thing. And like, that wasn't what was going on here.
No, it was refreshing, because what would normally happen in a movie like this? So he's off work after dinner, he's playing with the kids. And then when it's time for bed, he goes up and plays his video games, you know? And like, but they didn't sell it as like, oh, what an awful person for just being a loser that plays games. It's like, no, he's doing...
Well, the movie makes it clear that, like, he goes off and plays his video games, but she goes off and watches her reality TV. Like, it's not... It's a choice they're both making. It's not he's ignoring her. It's like they've each kind of fallen into this kind of sexless rut of, like, we're just kind of becoming... It's the early phase of they're becoming roommates instead of husband and wife. And it's, you know, messing with her head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think this is about also the standards that women have. And I think it sets it up really good. Like when she goes into that private school and she has the run-ins with the principal, because it's that veiled, you know, we think he would fit better elsewhere. Yeah. And they're not telling you the truth. But we don't know what's wrong with the child. There's this boy, and he's obviously got special needs.
He's
They haven't been diagnosed yet. You know it's something.
And I will say this part bothered me a little bit, because I see movies and TV playing this game a lot more when it comes to characters that are somewhere on the autism spectrum, which is they don't want to deal with the heat of identifying a character as having Asperger's or autism.
So they don't even say it.
And so they just leave it undiagnosed, and they just won't ever address what the issue might be. And I think some of the problem is because something like Asperger's has so many different, like, unique ways in which it can manifest itself, that if they pick one, then people get mad at them because there's a million other kids out there that have a different manifestation. And then it's like, how dare you?
Or they say that's not perfect for
that. Exactly. And there's no way something like that is going to be perfect, because everybody's symptoms are slightly different, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that
radically.
We were all trying to think, what's wrong with the kid? What's wrong with the kid? And then when she said, we've had him tested, blah, 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 nobody can come up with anything.
Yeah.
That was really like, oh, okay.
He has, I'll just film diagnose him. The kid has, in my opinion, a version of sensory processing disorder. And it's honestly something that my youngest, they thought had, because he did a lot of the things that the kid in this movie does. And there were times when we had to brush him like a horse. And
really? So you tried that? You had to do that same?
Yeah.
That's a real treatment.
That's a real thing. Yeah. Okay. And so,
I didn't know if that was like some, you know,
like hippie,
yeah,
new
like
agey.
Exactly.
Kind of is, but
it's a real one.
They process like things differently. And again, it can manifest itself in all sorts of weird ways. So they'll be like, does your kid like have a meltdown if you put him on the swing? No. Okay. Does he spend 9 hours straight on the swing? Yes. Either one of those things could mean that he has a sensory processing disorder. And it doesn't have an official medical classification, or at least it didn't when I was potentially going through this process, which has been at this point seven or 8 years. But so it was kind of a weird, nebulous thing, because they also thought that my son might have had autism, because basically everybody with autism has sensory processing disorder of some kind, but not everybody with sensory processing disorder has necessarily autism or Asperger's. And so the problem becomes is that a lot of what professionals use for the red flags of spotting autism or Asperger's are actually sensory processing disorder symptoms. And so if your kid has a sensory processing issue but not autism, they're pretty quick sometimes to jump to autism, because those are the big red flags. Like, we always, you know, we always kind of talk about Brian and his happy hands. When he gets excited, he'll like do this thing where he shakes his hands almost like he's trying to make them helicopters, like, and he's still does it. It's a lot more low key, but he still does it. When the kid's freaking out when the toilet flushes, I mean, I've had that exact same thing happen with Brian when he was younger, when we were at a movie and the hand dryers, somebody'd hit a hand dryer and it was on, like it would flip him out.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, it's, I mean, I think that really speaks to the film, and it's not just this part, but the part about being a mother and the part about the family and then the kid and all this. It's very realistic. Yeah. I think that's the big takeaway, is everything going on in this film was believable. And even though I knew these actors, it really just was like, I was like, I was just watching a documentary, or I was watching a real life family dealing with these issues. It's so well written and so well acted.
So perceptive about everything. When she talks about the little girl, about how it's going to be harder for her because of the way girls are. So when I said women put impossibly tough standards on themselves, I think women are our own worst enemy, because we have this impossible ideal of June Cleaver that we have to live up to. Like when she was talking about baking the minion cupcakes,
yeah,
and stuff like that, because you think that you're this terrible mother because you don't have time or you're tired. And it just puts stress on her. So when she finally does call the nanny service and she gets this woman who's this incredible fixer,
yeah,
and it just makes it, but I think that that's a lot too. Like, we have such pressure. And then her brother being rich with the wife who couldn't work out when she was, what, 9 months
yeah,
pregnant.
She's like, I couldn't. Yeah. So the
hilarious.
She has a brother played by Mark Duplass. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
I always love seeing him in a movie.
I do too.
First of all, I wanted to talk about this. I thought it was against the law for Ron Livingston and Mark Duplass to be in the same movie because they're the same person. Like when I didn't know who Mark Duplass was, you know, because I grew up with Ron Livingston, Office Space. That's right. Like I knew of him, and then Mark Duplass came on the scene. And I'm like, oh, that's the new Ron Livingston. Like, their facial expressions are the same. They look similar. Their cadence is the same. When I saw they were both in this movie, I thought there was going to be like the time-space continuum would break down or something.
It's like putting Jesse Eisenberg and Michael Cera in the same movie.
Yeah, so, exactly. So I like both of them. It's just really funny. It's one of those things where, like, I always said Tobey Maguire and Jake Gyllenhaal look very similar, and then they played brothers in a movie called Brothers.
Yeah,
and it finally happened.
Great movie.
Yeah, years later, though, after I made that, you know, analysis, I'm like, okay, that's perfect casting. I've always thought they were. Marlo's married to a character that Ron Livingston plays, and then she goes to dinner. They both don't want to go over to the brother's house, right?
The brother's like really like rich and successful, and I liked how this was played too, because they feel like he flaunts his wealth, and I really didn't get. I feel like he enjoys his wealth, but I really didn't feel like he was flaunting it as much as he does have money and he enjoys the things money can bring. But he
didn't seem like an a-hole.
Yeah,
right. I mean, he was a smartass, but he wasn't a bad person.
And he legitimately cares about his sister.
Well, and I think what's great about this is such a realistic thing that we all deal with every day, is two people having different interpretations of the same thing.
Yeah.
So I love this. So before they go over there, when Marlo says, we're going to go have dinner with my brother, he's like, oh, I don't want to go. He hates me. Why should I even go, right? And then later on in the film, it's the same exact thing where he's talking with his wife and he's like, oh, he hates me.
Right.
And so it's great that both of them have the same perspective, maybe for different reasons, but they're just crossing wires. It's like neither hates each other. They think each other.
They're just different.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he takes her into his tiki bar.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious.
I love the line when she's like, when did the birds start singing? That was my first thought, too. I'm like, right? This looks like a tiki room.
I know. I thought, oh, Katie would really enjoy that joke. We're such big Disney fans. But so when after dinner, when they do go to the tiki room, he decides that he will give her a gift. And the gift, he hands her this card, and it's a night nanny, which is something I've never heard of.
Is that a real thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a
living. We live in the Midwest, so we don't know. Like, we don't have that stuff here.
Yeah. It's not like the same as like a live-in nanny. This is a nanny that comes at night.
So you can
name.
Sleep. She takes care of the nighttime things. Yeah. So you can sleep.
I've got a good local story about that. Years ago, this is before this widespread, you know, a lot of officers being killed. Mm-hmm. This officer got killed, and it was in the 80s, and his, maybe early 90s, and his wife was pregnant with twins. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. I can't remember the guy's name. Was it Stanzi? Was it? But anyway, his wife was pregnant with twins.
This is weird. One of the guys from my fraternity is a cop, and his last name is Stanzi. Like, that was like, so I don't know.
So maybe. Anyway, so it was a big deal. He got caught. He got shot. The woman's, pregnant with twins. Bruce Springsteen stepped it up and hired a night nanny for this woman.
Oh, wow.
When she got, when she delivered the babies. So I don't know how he heard about it.
Yeah.
If he was in town for a concert or if he got a letter or an email, it might be in his book. But a friend of ours that works in radio worked with a police officer's wife. That's okay. How they know that. But Springsteen didn't like announce it
right
to the world or say anything because he just did it honestly. But wasn't that a wonderful gift?
Wow.
So that's the first time I ever heard of that.
Cool. Okay. So, yeah. And I wasn't familiar with it like Tom, but it seemed reasonable. And so she's really hesitant. She takes offense to it. She's basically like, is this what rich assholes do? And really takes offense where the brother's trying to do something nice.
Right.
He's not doing it to be like, this is what we would do. And we, So he gives her this and she's like, whatever. She takes the card, but she's not happy about it. But as her daily life goes on, she is just getting more and more.
I like the montage of just the monotony of an infant.
And this is after the baby's born.
Yeah, they make babies cute for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, so you don't kill them.
So
it doesn't
she's
always work, but more often than not, it works.
Yeah. No, because motherhood is constant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she has the baby and they do this montage that rapidly it gets faster and faster. And it's just like, cut to, diapers, driving to school, crying, up all night, diapers. And it just eventually, I think it was, wasn't she on the way to school one day and the kids are freaking out and she has a breakdown?
Yeah, the kid has a meltdown because he wants to park in a certain parking lot.
Yeah, he's doing that kind of a thing. So you see, and I think that was a really clever shot, how outside the car it was silent.
Yeah.
And you just hear cars like, quietly driving around. But it was a great way to see her world and then like what's going on outside around her.
I have a real quick mean question.
Okay.
Because I just, when I got to think about when I was like, oh, that's why they make babies cute so you don't kill them. Was this not a cute baby? This baby was not cute.
Like, I didn't notice.
I thought it was kind of a, like, normally in movies you see like really like cute, adorable, borderline
Gerber babies.
Yeah, borderline puppet looking babies, and not an American Sniper puppet baby, but like just really like aggressively cute. Like bred in a lab for cuteness. And like this baby had kind of weird bug eyes. And like, I kept waiting to be like, oh, that baby's cute. And like that moment never came. And I kind of like, and I don't know if that was a choice. Like if they were like, let's pick a baby that's not the cutest baby in the world.
Well, thanks. This is Jason Reitman's baby. So
I know. That's probably
some executive's baby.
Yeah. But I don't know. I was just wondering if they, they didn't pick like the traditional really cute, chubby cheeked, like,
I thought she was fine, but there is that, Seinfeld thing about ugly babies. So, but Charlize Theron, do you think she'd have an ugly baby? I don't know. But sometimes babies are odd when they're first born and then they develop into
that is also true. I mean, like my youngest, I thought he was a pretty weird looking baby. Like I was just like, I hope you grow out of it. He did, but.
Tom, it's 2018, and the baby got the job because they were the best actor.
They were the best baby for the job.
I mean, that's
I just didn't know if they maybe deliberately picked a baby that was a little bit more difficult for the audience to bond with.
Yeah.
Oh.
So they're not like, shut up. That's a cute baby. You take care of it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, she's so exhausted, but I just think that women are just, they do. They think they have to be this perfect person, this ideal vision of womanhood, and it's impossible to live up to. And plus, if you they're having their third.
Yeah.
Usually, the first one, you're so careful. Everything's just so, but you don't know what you're doing, but you're still so perfect. You read the books and all that. The second one, you're just kind of like a little bit.
Yeah, what's going
relax.
On.
But then third one, I imagine, you're
it's
just
like that line
tossing
from,
around.
It's like that line from Parenthood where Steve Martin's like, the third one, you let them juggle knives. Like,
yeah.
You're just like, they're going to be fine.
So it was very relatable. It seemed to me very realistic. You could relate to all the late nights and the just crying and you try to get some sleep and then they're up again. And
yes, yeah. I had an angel baby and a devil baby.
Oh.
And the devil baby never slept. And I was in a rocker as a zombie for 2 years, rocking a kid.
Right.
So believe me, I know what that felt like.
Yeah.
And so I think, I think that was really good, especially Charlize Theron, because you know how glamorous and beautiful right. and accomplished she is, and then she's playing this everyday woman. But I'm just totally saying it wrong. Diablo Cody, her dialogue was so perceptive about every stage,
yeah,
and about, like, she did love her husband, she did love her children, but she actually had dreams once upon a time, and then this young person comes in her life that's at the start and has all this energy and dreams, and she's very thoughtful, and she's just thinking about what her life was like back then.
Yeah. And so the yeah. night nanny shows up, and yeah. her name is Tully, and she's like young, and she makes the comment about, you've clearly never had a baby, like, because of her body. And
this is Mackenzie Davis. Do we know her from anything? Because she's so good.
She looked
this.
Familiar, but I could not place where I would know her from.
If you watch Black Mirror, she's in a very iconic episode of Black Mirror. I forget which one because Matt Meyer told me about it.
Okay, I'll look it yeah. up. But I do love Black Mirror. I just didn't. Yeah. Maybe that's why she's familiar. She's so good. And I think we should just spoil this for the sake of
I agree.
Not coming back to all these things. So everything that Lynn just mentioned about her, about...
We should probably say before you spoil it that if you have any intention of watching the movie, we're... going, like, some spoilers are like, it's a Vin Diesel movie, can we really spoil
right.
it? But this is one where let like
hinges on
the entire movie, like, turns on what we're going to tell you. So, like, if you haven't seen the movie yet and it's important to you, you might just want to go ahead and hit pause and circle back around later.
We'll wait.
Yeah. Okay. It was hard to write the review. It's always hard to write the review when you don't. I don't give away spoilers.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
So, but it was you shouldn't just in a review, to be. But. Just delicate, but I know yeah. your name is Real Spoilers.
Right,
that's
so it's a little, but yeah. So I figure if we wait until the spoiler pops up chronologically, we're almost going to have to go back and rediscuss every scene yeah. that comes after. So
basically, what it comes down to is everything Lynn touched on about how Marlo used to have these dreams and she used to have energy and go out and do all this stuff. Well, it comes to find out at the end of the movie, we discover that Marlo's maiden name is Tully. And so she has created this manifestation of this perfect young woman that is so alive and makes her feel alive. And so really, this movie is Charlize Theron's character
talking to herself.
Yeah, and being sleep deprived. Like, when she thinks she's going to sleep, Tully is up. So she is up all night. And so, again, we don't see that till the very end, but it's a great reveal. I had no idea this movie was going that route.
I did not either, because yeah. I wondered why it was called Tully. And then when she showed up, it was Tully.
Right.
But when they say her maiden name, you went, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of knew when the accident happened, and then, you know, she's like the mermaid coming out. I go, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's
this
where
it, is all.
I will say that I pieced it together just maybe half a scene before they reveal.
I just thought, oh, she ruined this. Like, being selfish, she ruined this young woman's life.
Yeah.
You know, because of the things we'll get into. But it's just.
And they lay the groundwork, too, that she has had mental health issues.
She had postpartum
yeah.
depression.
Well,
in
and it
the
sounds like
one.
It's been more than that, because, like, I'm trying to remember the brother says, like, we don't want what happened last time, but it sound like she has a history right. of bipolar, or and obviously bipolar used to be called manic depressive, and so I kind of surmise that her night nanny were manic episodes, but because the husband was asleep, he never saw them. Because he was aware to be on the lookout for it. You know?
It's so clever the way they piece this film together.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, no one else ever sees Tully. And it's not like you're in a room. I mean, the way that they shoot it, the way that the times line up, they wouldn't ever see Tully. Tully
right.
is a night nanny. Everyone else sleeps during the night.
Yeah.
So you see Marlo interacting with Tully. But the next day, she's just gone. And then Marlo's talking to her husband. And Marlo's talking to the brother about her or whatever. And it's just amazing. But it's also crossing the wires. Like, what were we just talking about? Was it something in Infinity War? We were just talking about a movie where... Two people hear the same thing, but they're crossing the wires.
Yeah.
It's another one of those great examples of clever writing where they're talking to each other and they get into some pretty interesting situations later on where it's really Marlo doing these things and we think it's Tully doing
right.
them. And the husband's like, are we going to talk about this? And it's like, but she's thinking like, no, we're not going to talk about what you know, what happened, but he's like, what changed between us? Like, we've been on in this rut. And, you know, and so I really loved the way that Diablo Cody wrote this from, you know, the perspective that we didn't see.
I think one of the things I liked is when she wakes, the kids wake up and there are cupcakes on the table and
with the minion faces.
Yeah, yeah. And in her mind, Tully made the cupcakes. And so she's like, where did these come from? And so the kids take the cupcakes to school. And when they drop them off, the son is like, they're like, where are the cupcakes coming from? And the son's like, oh, my mom made them. And at the time, in the moment, you think, oh, wow, she lied and took credit for that lady's cupcakes.
Well,
like,
also that's the kids don't know Tully either. Those kids don't. You know, Tully deals with the baby after they're in bed. So I thought she just didn't, like, say, oh, the night nanny made them. And, you know, kids, of course, oh, my parents are the best. They made these.
And the other thing is the parent in me, the former single dad who had to deal with stuff like this, is like, they do not let you bring unwrapped treats to school.
That's what
anymore.
I thought of too, because I was like, when the kids were little and they changed that rule, I was like, oh no.
Now they
won't even let you bring. So it used to be they had to be store bought. So you could buy like the cupcakes from the bakery,
from Walmart or whatever.
Bring that in.
Tray.
No more. Oh. Like now, each item has to be individually sealed,
like Hostess or Little Debbie.
So you can't bring any of the nice bakery stuff.
I get it though. There's crazies out there. I mean, you can open a tray of Walmart things and close a sticker on there. You know, I mean, there's just crazy people. But no, I love it. It's very cleverly written. The entire movie. I mean, we're people that have all seen a lot of movies. And it's pretty easy for me to detect a twist, but I really thought it was going to go down this generic route of, oh, she's going to be like, oh, I'm out of love with my husband and I'm falling for Tully. And I thought it was
going
to go.
That's
this,
where I thought it was going too.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted you to think.
And
That's what Tim said when he saw it. Cause he was like, I thought they were going to have a relationship because that whole thing about the Lifetime movies, remember by the Stalker and then the Kane and then.
And they get really close at certain points.
And she runs into the friend from college at the coffee shop.
And you knew there was something there.
And you could tell that like there was some sort of a relationship there that the friend from college would be totally cool with kicking back into gear.
Yeah.
And so you knew that there was that sort of, there was some history of bisexuality in her life. And so you thought like that, and I think it also helped.
They got really close at certain points. Yeah. I mean, it was either doing makeup or something. They were really close to one another. And it was like the generic, stereotypical go in for the kiss while you're doing this, but it didn't happen. And I was so happy, not because there's anything wrong with it, but it's like, don't tell me that story.
It just seems like a story we've seen before, and you're just like, oh, not that again.
And what we
got
was so deep. I mean, with her, it's about mental health. It's about her, you know, her bipolar manic episode and envisioning this person where really it was just her. But because she thought it was this other young person that she wanted to be, it's like all of a sudden her life was so much better, but it was just her making different choices.
And it's also like, I also thought it was a really accurate depiction of how mania can manifest itself. Not that it necessarily manifests itself in the creation of fictitious characters or imaginary friends, but that like she felt in the moment like the mania was a good thing, like it was helpful. And so she was like, you know, so she would have thought, I don't want to give this up. Look, the house is clean and cupcakes are getting made. And, you know, I'm having sex with my husband again. And like she would have thought like that was all positive. But to do that, she was staying awake 20 hours a day. And that's unsustainable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. I liked how they all tied in, especially like they went back to the stuff in the beginning. And then the Bushwick apartment, when that girl says, oh, do you still have, I still have that apartment. Yeah. So then they go back there and Bushwick, my son Charlie used to live in Bushwick. It's the hipster capital of the universe.
Okay.
So I thought that was really interesting that they went there.
Well, and she even talks about how like, oh, well, yeah, she could never afford to live here now. Like it must be rent controlled or something. Like the neighborhood was radically different. There was a great line where she's like, oh, you tell the neighborhood got really nice. There's a bakery for dogs. What it used to be, a bakery for people.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true with all these dog bakeries popping up and the stuff is not cheap, yet people will spend so much money
What did she say? She's like, we ate gluten back then. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, the writing is so good. And I just, again, the performances. Charlize Theron was so believable. I mean, we have to talk about the time when she goes to talk to the principal or headmistress or whatever. So her son goes to a private school. And we didn't mention that the brother, because of his donations and contributions to this school, they were able to get in where normally you know, Marlowe's family wouldn't be in, but because the brother's money, they were able to. And so they were letting the son go, but it was like, because of his disruptions, because of whatever issues he's dealing with, they keep hinting like, it's not a good fit. We need to figure a solution out. Eventually they say, you need to get an assistant or some kind of a helper that will be with him.
Yes, which would cost them a lot of money, having a person there all day.
Yeah, and she asks the principal, okay, who do I talk to get this? How do I get this? And she's like, oh, we don't provide those. You pay for them. And so she's in this totally, I mean, she's already dealing with the pregnancy and all the crazy stuff happening, dealing with the son, helping her daughter, taking care of the house. And then she's got this school to worry about where her son is basically going to lose his position in the school, which is a really good school. And so the breakdown in the principal's office thing, I
really like the school stuff too. Like, I felt like that was handled really well, similar to the husband in that it would have been easy to paint the school as a bunch of jerks. But like, the school's right. Like, they do have 24 other kids in the class to concern themselves with. And like, and that's why, you know, kids get IEPs and they get, you know, a one-to-one handler to help them. And she's at a private school, and she's at a private school clearly for kids with money that her brother is helping out with. And so, like, that school isn't set up for that. Like, it's in, you know, and there are a lot of families. I mean, I know family that's, you know, they're very Catholic and their kids go to Catholic school, but they had that one kid that they were like, he has special needs and he's going to go to a public school because when you send him to a public school, now they have to supply it. Mm. So, like, that's not an uncommon situation that parents pull their kids out of a private school to send them to a public school because, perhaps counterintuitively, they are better equipped to deal with it.
Yeah.
But the parents in that moment, until the kid gets there and adapts and they see that it goes okay, and then hopefully it does. I know that that's not always true, but I think in a lot of cases it is. But like, they in that moment they feel like, well, why isn't the school doing that for me?
Sure. No, the school was presented very well.
Yeah.
Everything you said makes sense, where you feel bad for Marlo and the son, and you want them to get help, but it's true. The school just can't provide that resource, and they're happy to have you hire someone that will help them out. But it's becoming more and more apparent that next year the son is going to have to go elsewhere. And so she loses it. She's sick of this, you know, what does quirky mean? Everyone says that. And she has a great monologue where she's going off on everybody. There's some like assistant secretary there or something that she's freaking out on. And it's a serious scene, but it's funny too, because it's just such a crazy kind of breakdown.
Right.
But she,
and because it's Diablo Cody, even when she's serious, she still talks in a way that's funny, that has punchlines built into it. I
like Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles at Lambert Airport.
Yeah,
when he's
just
finally can't take it anymore, and she has to. I like how when she and Tully are having the argument when they're on the town, night on the town, and she's telling her, okay, this is what you think life is going to be like. This is what it's really going to be like. And then, you know, Tully's telling her, oh, your life is boring. Your house is boring, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should wait until we get to that moment in the.
Well, yeah. So I just wanted to say, so throughout the film, so that first night, Tully comes over and just takes over. Like, Marla doesn't have to tell her where anything is. She's like, so what do I need to do this, that? And she's like, no, your job is you go to sleep. I've got everything taken care of. And then she picks up the baby. She's being sweet with her. It's like a very nice moment. And Marla's actually able to get a night of sleep. She wakes up and she's had a full night's rest. She feels refreshed.
She thinks.
Well, right, right. Well, Marlo has at least.
Yeah.
But then her day starts getting better. And every day, every time she interacts with Tully and is getting sleep, supposedly, and like life is getting so much better. So we see this change in her mood. We see the change in her interaction with the kids. We see the change in the interaction with the husband. And then there's that hilarious scene where Tully and Marlo are discussing like what the husband likes, because she's like, what's your sex life like? And she's basically like, we just don't. And Tully says, what is he into? And she's like, well, he has this thing for waitresses. Like, didn't he have a dream or a fantasy about waitresses?
He like used to work in a diner and like Alice, like Mel's Diner on Alice, which probably means nothing to 80% of the people that listen.
Okay, Baby Driver, that girl, she's in the traditional.
There you go. Thank you for making it something the millennials will get.
There you
and
go.
She had bought a waitress outfit to kind of role play with him, but never really kind of had the courage to wear it.
And it was really funny when Tully's inquiring, what's he into? And it's really weird. And she thought it was going to be some freaky weird fetish. And she's like, he likes waitresses.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh,
that's just kind of cute.
And then she's just like, where is it? And she's like,
well,
what?
And I love how the movie kind of fixes like little plot holes this way, because when she puts on the outfit, I'm like, there's no way that would fit both of them.
Yeah.
And so, but then you look back and you're like, well, it didn't.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how it is. Exactly.
But, yeah. So she takes Tully up to her husband's
room.
And
at first I thought it was like, well, she's just, this Tully is a very free spirit. She's very, she's like the manic pixie dream girl character. If this were a romantic comedy, that's what Tully is.
Yeah.
And so she goes upstairs and I thought, well, their marriage is in this dead rut. She's just going to let Tully spice things up and do whatever. But later on we find out that it was Marlo in this too small maid's waitress uniform. Yeah. And so it's just funny. The next morning, the husband's up and the kids are ready. And he looks, I mean, everybody's great. And she's smiling. And he says, are we going to talk about last night? And she either just ignores it or says no or whatever. And,
yeah, I think she said no.
Yeah. And it's so funny to find out. It's like, he's like, are we going to talk about what you did? Like, what happened with you? What's this? You know?
Like we had crazy good sex for the first time.
And we're thinking,
like,
are we going to talk about this three-way or whatever? Like, that, it's like, nope, it's just going to go unspoken. And, really clever writing there again. But so her life is getting better and better. And it's just like everything with the school. She goes back to the principal. She apologizes. She apologizes for the guy where she's like said, she's like, F, you know, she said F you to this assistant or whatever.
Yeah.
And she apologizes to him. And I love it because at this point she's already had that breakdown and the principal and the assistant are like, oh my God, she's here. And she's like, apologizes. I'm so sorry. And you know, it was just really interesting. You see that change in her mood, but it basically all comes to a head when after, you know, weeks or months or whatever her, you know, obligation was, whatever Tully's arrangement was, are coming to an end. And so they end up, Tully, it seems like she's breaking up with someone. That's the end of some relationship.
Yeah.
I think it's what happened to Sully when she was living in that apartment in Bushwick with that girl.
Oh,
she's kind of following the same timeline.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because she was like, well, I have guys over and she doesn't like it and it's complicated.
Oh, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Smart. That's super smart since this is a younger, Marlo when her maiden name was still Tully. That makes perfect sense. So yeah, so Tully's going through this terrible breakup, which is presumably with the friend we see at the coffee shop.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I just want to go out. Let's go out. And then Marlo's like, well, we have a baby. We can't. And then she's like, we don't have a babysitter, I think. And Tully's like, well, what's your husband doing right now? Like, he can take care of the baby. One thing I had a question about, maybe you two caught it or could answer. At one point, Marlo says, well, I have to stay up with the baby because I have to feed the baby. But she's pumping breast milk the entire time. The husband can get up and go to the fridge and get a breast milk and feed the baby.
Yeah, theoretically. I mean,
I thought that was very odd.
That's what you pump for. But I mean, I took it as, I mean, a lot of mothers, they do that and it's there, but it's all, but a lot of times it's for when they're out and about.
Sure.
You know, but I think,
but I mean,
but I kind of took it as like she was still in that mode where sure, the husband could do it, but she didn't want him to, like she still wanted to. Oh. You know.
Yeah, and then she wasn't known. And then you're not supposed to drink alcohol when you're breastfeeding.
Well, that's another reason you pump.
Yeah, and that. But also, she got really impacted. That's why she was being, you know, like in that terrible pain, and they were going to leave and everything.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So they go out on a night in the town. They basically say, "Yeah, the husband's here. He can watch the baby." Which we find out later. It's like she. I don't think she even told Ron Livingston, right? Like
he didn't know where she was.
Yeah. He woke up to an empty house and a baby.
So obviously,
and the car gone.
Yeah, so she's obviously dealing with some stuff. But I thought the driving scene was hilarious because it took them what looked to be hours to get into town. I just thought it was so funny that, like, for me, like, if I have to drive like a half hour, I'm like, man, that's kind of a long drive.
Yeah,
it looked like to go out on the night, like I would want to turn around and go back home at this rate. It was just a funny street sign after street sign, kind of a.
Yeah, were they in New Jersey?
I think so.
They would. That's how I took it because they were going to Brooklyn.
Yeah,
is where they decided to go, and So, right.
But yeah. it was just funny how long it seemed to take. But they finally got there, and then Tully just drops this bomb. She doesn't really, you know, hold it back for long. She's just like, I have to leave. And Marlo is having it, her life is so great now, and Tully's just like, it's time, which is really cool in hindsight, knowing that it's like you're getting to a better place, like you're figuring out what you need to do for yourself, and like it's time. I can't. Yeah.
It's Mary Poppins.
Yeah, exactly. We can't keep this up forever. But
spoonful of sugar help the nanny go down.
Yeah, exactly. So is this when we get to the bathroom scene with the
she's bar? Yeah, she's trying to express herself because the milk ducts were getting so it's real super painful.
Yeah. Okay.
You guys know that.
Yeah.
But really funny scene though where they're
not
in the
first hand.
But yeah. But no, you just see I mean it is. It's like a couple hours if you haven't done it. That's why so they're trying to get her to go in so she can, you know, just get some of it out.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a hilarious scene because like someone's knocking on the door and they're yelling back at them and she's over the toilet and I think isn't she throwing up from drinking so much?
Well, she's over the toilet. It's like this weird like dive bar and was there like a bathtub in their toilet. She was like sitting on something. I couldn't tell what she was sitting on. But it was like
over the toilet.
I thought she was just sitting on the toilet. Okay, and then she turned around
because then she turned around, and threw up in a toilet.
So it's like she's trying to express the milk, and then she's throwing up in the toilet, and it was just a really crazy scene.
Well, and I thought this was gonna be their sex moment. Like,
oh, really?
I thought that's because she has to take her breast out.
And I
thought
how romantic.
I don't think it's romantic, but I thought it was going to end up going that direction.
Like, don't leave. I mean, she was trying to get her to say, like, don't leave. And she was when she was buzzing her old apartment and the girl's like, she's not going to be there, you know, and all that. So it was just, I don't know.
And it doesn't say like, I can't let you go up there. Tully says something like, you can't go up there. Like, she says to her was some kind of a line. Like she's trying to talk her out of it because she's like, yeah, she'll let me in. She wants to see me. And Tully's just like, no, because Tully realizes or her subconscious is telling her like, you're in a different place. Like I know this is what you want, but you do have a husband. You do have a family. This isn't going to be good for anybody because you're basically trying to rekindle an old relationship.
Well, and when they have that fight, for lack of a better word, on the street where Tully's telling the speech you referenced earlier about like, you're giving your kids the childhood you didn't get. Like your kids want a boring childhood because boring means stable.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's very well written.
Yeah.
And
I just thought, what a great moment. Like you never really see that sentiment expressed in movies. Like most movies are like suburbs are boring. And why would you want to live there? And everything's about follow your dreams, almost consequences be damned. And no matter, you know, who you might hurt or kick to the curb or whatever, you know, and it was just really nice to see a movie that basically said, look, you made some life choices and it's really easy to look at the other path and ask yourself, what if? But at the end of the day, like you're responsible for people and you don't get to do that. Like you have to you know, you're supposed to stay put. And what you think is boring for them is a stable, secure childhood where they can grow up and be stable and secure adults. And so that means sometimes you don't get to go bang the old girlfriend from Bushwick. You know, like, I mean, that's...
The grass is always greener on the other side. And that's what they don't show a lot in movies. So that's another part of the truth of this film, which is really nice because you hear from people all the time that are like, you know, like, oh, it must be so fun to be single and go out and do all this stuff. And then you hear from the single people like, no, I don't want to have to date. People are jerks. It's a pain in the ass. I don't want to date, you know, I want a house. I want that security. And so it's like, you always want what you can't have. And so she's looking at all the negatives. She's being pessimistic, but really she has that stable, secure life with her family.
And it was nice in retrospect to basically know it's the younger version of herself kind of saying like, you're in a rough patch, but you did it. Like, this is what I wanted and you got us there and don't squander it, you know?
Yeah. Well, the kids, I like how the kids notice her changing. Which is good because the kids don't make a big deal about it, you know, like because kids know they just consider that their reality.
Right.
Yeah. But all of a sudden the house is clean.
Why is the house clean? That was a really funny moment.
And you all know, both of you know what stepping on a Lego is like.
Oh, man.
With bare feet. Oh, so, you know.
So their house that they live in, So I kind of took it, they were living in the parents' house, that they, because everything in the house was very antiquated.
I could see that.
Like it was,
yeah, like they just took over the parents' house.
Yeah, because antiquated, like, I mean, a lot of that, decor was like from the 70s. Like, yeah, even their, yeah, micro, what really made me notice it was the microwave.
Yeah, I did notice the appliances.
Their microwave
older.
Had an actual knob that you turn and would click. And like, I'm like, dude, that's one of the first microwaves ever. Like, I'm surprised you had a third kid with a microwave like that. Like, I can't believe his boys are still swimming. But
but one of them might be like the Hulk or something.
Yeah, because my first thought was like, why would they? I mean, you can get a decent, and it wasn't like one that mounted to the wall or anything. It just sat on a countertop, and I was like, you can get a countertop microwave for like $60. Like, there's no reason to have a microwave from the 70s. Like, and I was just like, I bet they're in the parents' house. Like, the brother didn't need it and knew the sister did, and was like, you take mom's house, and I'll stay where I'm at, and then you don't have a house payment, or you have a lesser house payment, but it came with really old ugly wallpaper and a beat up couch that's 30 years old and a microwave that, you know, they bought sometime during the Carter administration.
So, yeah, it clearly it's they're, I mean, the husband has a good job, like they're doing okay. It's just they're not making money like the
and they've got three kids, and they've got two of them are in private school. Like, exactly. It sounds like the brother pulled strings to get them in but wasn't necessarily footing the bill.
Exactly.
Which, so, I mean,
not that it should, but that's what I took it as. It's like they're not spending money on the cars, they're not spending it on the house. It's like they're trying to feed the kids, put them through school that they can't honestly afford, but it's the best thing for them. And so, yeah, they're just living that modest lifestyle. And I think that's where a little bit of the spite comes from, you know, looking at the brother's lifestyle. He's got this new car. He's got the G-Wagon that no one needs. And he's not being a jerk about it. He just mentioned, did you see it? But
he's excited about a new thing he bought, but he wasn't.
But going into the house, her and Ron Livingston are making fun of it and saying how dumb it is.
Did you see Game Night yet?
No,
did
I didn't.
Okay, so like, have you seen it?
No.
Oh my God, so good. But Kyle Chandler's character is kind of the version of the brother that they perceive him to be.
That's like, another one that could be a triplet of those two. Kyle Chandler looks like those two.
But he's like, you know, like, I bought this brand new Corvette. Isn't it awesome? And like, you know, and so, and again, so it's nice to, it works in that movie. I'm not bagging on Game Night. I really enjoyed it. But like, it was nice to see that it's like, he isn't doing that, but you also understand why, if you don't have those things, it feels like he's doing that.
Yeah, exactly. That is the you know, two perspectives on the same thing. I really liked seeing that, and I love it when they show it from the other side. I think, and it's really, there's a couple of lines, there's not many, but just that line, even the one line of, no, he hates me, from Mark Duplass, when that's the same thing that Ron Livingston said. It's just, that really showed the insight into, well, these, they've got their perspective, but it's
not. I like that those two lines that they were both saying about the other one were like spaced apart in time within the movie. It would have been real easy to have it be cutesy and back to back.
But at first, you really did think, like, I thought Mark Duplass was going to be a jerk. I thought, you know, but more and more his actions seemed like they weren't. And I think that's very easy for someone being emotional, you know, the both of them. I mean, they're putting emotions into it, their own emotions, what they don't have and what he's saying. And they're projecting this, what they don't have, onto him for his haves.
And I thought Mark Duplass was great casting in that. A lot of times when you see an actor in a movie, like, you know what that actor's there to do. Like, you know, like, oh, this guy always plays the bad guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, Mark Duplass, like, sometimes he plays a total jerk, but other times he plays a cool guy. And so it's like you didn't know what he was there to do. Like he does both. And so, like, you do have that moment of like, oh, maybe he is the jerk. And then you get to the end and you're like, oh, okay, he's not the jerk. He's just a guy. And it's, you know, so it's like, it was also from a casting standpoint, kind of a nice head fake that they cast an actor who you don't know if he's going to be a douche.
It's not William Fichtner is the brother.
Who's that guy that, oh man, he was in a, I always remember from 6 Feet Under, and he was in that that war movie with Woody Harrelson where they're like back from Afghanistan, and oh man, I'm totally blanking on his name. He's a really well known character actor.
But yeah. I know what you mean.
But he always kind of plays an a-hole.
When you have a character actor, like a lot of them, yeah. I mean, they're really, really good, but they get jobs based on, like, oh, you're perfect for that guy.
Right.
No, it was really good casting. Again, I think the performances were great. But what it all comes down to in this conclusion is, so they have their fight, and before they even go out, Tully is like, I'll drive. I'll be fine to drive. And then Marlo says, oh, I won't drink that much. Well, it ends up that Marlo gets hammered. I mean, she's thrown up in the bathroom. She has way too much to drink, but she still ends up driving home, and then they end up crashing off of a bridge. And at this point, you know, they're having this intense, it's not as intense here, but it's like Marlo's kind of, she's mad at her and she doesn't want Tully to go and everything. And I just keep thinking, well, this young woman has her whole life ahead of her, and it sucks. Like, I get it, but oh, Marlo's being so selfish here and Tully has stuff to do. And then they crash off the bridge and I'm like, oh my God, she's going to end up being dead. And now Marlo's taken this woman's entire life. And so I felt so bad for her. But it flashes to the hospital and Ron Livingston's there and trying to get information and what does he end up saying? Like, she's asking, they're asking, do you know who
information,
she
was? Information for the paper, for the, to admit her into the hospital for the paperwork. And they're asking, like, do you have your insurance card? And they're like, what's her maiden name? And he's like, Tully.
That's where it
is. Okay.
And then it clicks and it's like, wow, the whole thing. So, and then I think they go back and do the flashbacks. You see her. Don't they show her
a
making
bit,
the pie
yeah.
with herself and,
yeah.
and doing something?
Yeah, like in the bar, she's having the cocktail
yeah.
sitting there.
It's the whole it's a Fight Club thing. I mean, it's
right.
this, yeah. this is the Fight Club yeah. reveal, basically.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
they show all these scenes with, you know, she's not punching herself, luckily, like in Fight Club. But you see her doing all these things and interactions we just watched that were so charming and such a great scenes between her and Tully. And then, yeah, we get that big reveal. And so we eventually, he goes in. Does he go in? Is she like in a coma, right? Or it's pretty serious. I remember, I can't remember if she wakes up in the hospital or if we just see later.
She wakes up in the hospital and she clearly has black eyes and injuries yeah. and you don't know if she has a head injury,
right
and because I thought she was gonna be in a coma, but I
yeah but what I liked about Ron Livingston, it was like he was so concerned, and then the nurse was, because he said, well, she has a night nanny, and then I don't know what the nurse said to him where she was like, well, aren't you there?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It was like, that, what's wrong with you? Yeah.
Yeah. It was that same conversation that we were kind of alluding to earlier of like, well, what's your husband doing? They had that conversation. She's yeah. The baby's supposed to be with the night nanny and they weren't there. And it's like, yeah, weren't you home? So it was a good, nice little scene and kind of reaffirmed what they were talking about earlier. And basically it ends up that, they flash forward and she seems pretty okay, right? I mean,
it seems like
cane.
She's got a cane, but it seems like there's a new normal.
But
and
mentally,
that,
she's kind of okay with
yeah.
after this experience. She's kind of okay with her life again, and
right.
She's learned from.
She's
Tully.
Learned a lesson, which is nice from a storytelling standpoint, but is also kind of like oh, nobody ever talks about the upside of mental illness. Like, you know, like I don't think most people have an episode like that and go, oh, I've learned a lesson and now my life is fixed. Like it does, you know, like that was a little cutesy, but I liked the movie enough that I was kind of willing to turn a blind eye to it.
It didn't seem offensive to me and not, you know, and not that I've dealt with the same things, but to me, like, I think the story handled it really well. And I think it really shows, and really in a simple point, it's like, be happy with what you have. I mean, she learned that, you know, she wanted all these other things, and a lot of people like things that they can't have or have never had. But, you know, if you look at the positives, and she's got this great family, she's got three kids, she has a husband that loves her. You know, he may not be perfect, but who is? But like their life, I mean, they're perfect for one another. And
there's a great line where she talks about riding every horse on the merry-go-round when she was single.
Oh my gosh, which one was he?
Which one was your husband? The bench.
Oh,
but that's so true, right? And guys do it too. Like, what you want for a night out when you're 22 isn't necessarily what you want to marry and raise a family with.
He's stable.
Yeah,
he's stable. It's the stability. You don't. Like, he's not the stallion. He's the bench, but the bench is stable, right?
Right.
It's not going anywhere.
These were all people. They were just trying to do the best they could, and it was very realistic in terms of that. It's just like they're just trying to get through a day, trying to be a good parent, trying to be a good spouse, trying to that. You know, she started cooking better meals and things. But what I love so much about that ending is when she is talking to her husband about getting the night nanny, and she's talking about Lifetime movies, and she says it winds up a stalker, or they, you know, have an affair with the husband, and then the wife ends up with a cane. And then at the end, that's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of subtleties in this movie, so there's a lot of nuances, but I think everybody could relate to it.
I was about to make the same point. I think there's something in this movie for everyone, and even though the main character is a pregnant woman or a woman that has a child and is dealing with taking care of three kids, like, I still related to certain parts of just having kids or feelings of whatever it is, you know, things that you don't have that you want.
I think we've all had moments where we feel kind of stuck in our lives, and like, and you have that what if. That's what Facebook is for, right? Like, you scroll through and you're like, what if, you know?
You have your reinvention.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I really like the scene because they referenced to it before when he's like, you know, I do the dishes or whatever. And like at the end, they're sitting there doing the dishes next to one another.
Yeah.
So I thought that was actually really cute in a good way. Where
another sign that they have their parents' house. They don't have a dishwasher.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who doesn't have a dishwasher in today's
really
world?
That's really clever that you thought of that. I also flash back to Kramer versus Kramer because Meryl Streep.
I just watched that like a week ago.
Because Meryl Streep's character, she was like the first mom in a movie to be like, I can't, you know. Well, she wasn't the first, but the mainstream, because you had Diary of a Mad Housewife and you had Jenna Rollins and, you know, other things. But you know what I'm saying? Like it was.
Or what was that Peter Falk movie?
Yeah, Jenna Rollins. What was it? A Woman Under the Influence? A Woman Under the Influence, wasn't it?
Is that what it was?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, in the 70s, that's when everybody, the women started getting, you know, like having careers and that. But I just thought that was really realistic. And then when she comes back, you know, because she's not a villain.
Right.
It's just that she was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And who can't relate to being overwhelmed? I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. And again, like to Tom's point, no one was the villain. There was no bad guy here.
It's just,
and I really liked that because it would have been really easy to try to make a statement. I mean, I think Diablo Cody
did make a statement, just not the one you're used to seeing.
Well,
in a
right
movie.
And I mean, I think that Diablo Cody is, she's a feminist and she wants, but it's not like she was trying to push an agenda with this movie.
And it's nice because so often, you know, people equate feminism with being anti-family or anti-stability or anti-homemaking, and like you can still do that and do all those things too. Like, they're not mutually exclusive.
It's supposed to be all about choices, you know, that's the thing you're supposed to say. It's all about your choices.
Yeah.
But I do think it speaks to a lot of that. And I think because of the 80s, the conspicuous consumption of that, everybody is trying to keep up with the Joneses are looking wistful.
Yeah.
Or, well, you know, you see these people have ungodly wealth. You don't know what they do.
Yeah.
Because do we know what Mark Duplass
does? They never vague about it. They never really say what he does. That I remember.
Ron Livingston is like a software salesman.
He talks about how he does something that's so boring he just
glazes
over.
Yeah.
And he tries to explain it and it didn't.
Well, and Mark Duplass like tries to talk about it.
He tries
to
repeat it back and you know that he got it wrong, but you couldn't tell what he got wrong. You just know that it's wrong. So
it's just funny how they just set people up to be like, this is the way we are and this is the way you are. You know, like Mark Duplass's wife was one of those moms that, you know, I'm sure all her kids don't eat sugar or dairy or
she worked out through the entire pregnancy, that line you mentioned earlier, which is hilarious.
But it's a wonderful movie. So
I
really liked it.
And a good companion piece to A Quiet Place. Have a double feature on Mother's Day. This movie's just in time for Mother's Day.
Ah, there
Look
you
at
go.
That.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it for this one.
Yeah.
And Lynn, where can people find you and your stuff?
Okay, well, I write for the Webster Kirkwood Times, so timesnewspapers.com. We are also in South County Times, West End Word. And then I am on KTRS on the Jake Cancellor All Access show on Thursday nights, but I'm going to be on, well, you won't have this ready.
We're not.
But anyway, usually Thursday nights, and then I do a minute review with Paul Cook on Y98 during drive time on Fridays.
That's a lot.
A minute.
But that's only the big movies.
Gotcha.
Like Jay and I, we can talk about art movies and stuff.
She could review 60 movies in the time we could do this episode.
And then Kevin.
Hi, I'm Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. You can also see my reviews and interviews and all that good stuff on ReviewSTL.com. And I also want to plug our new Patreon. So thank you very much to everyone who has supported Real Spoilers. It's patreon.com/RealSpoilers. Joe and I are doing a weekly 0.5 episode. We're also dropping, you may have seen, a bonus clip of Tom. We posted his 20-year-old radio demo. So
It's all done through like a bullhorn. Like I sound like Al Jolson.
Yeah. So we're going to try to post as much behind the scenes stuff, maybe episodes that never made it to air, older podcasts we recorded, just maybe the stuff before and after we record. We could put some kind of little.
We
have all sorts of ideas. So it's only $5 or more a month. So $5 is the lowest. You get at least 4 full length brand new episodes a month for the $5 plus all the extras, and then more ideas to come.
Awesome. And you can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to find the show online, you can do that at facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. No idea what's next week.
We're all out of sorts.
It is Life of the Party.
Life of the Party. Which one's that?
Melissa McCarthy teams up with her husband.
I think I'm out of town that weekend.
What a treat for Kevin. He loves Melissa McCarthy.
I'm definitely out of town that weekend.
And her husband directed it. So you just think of, what was it, Tammy?
Yeah.
Oh,
that
God.
Was not a good one. Yeah.
Oh.
But so anyway, that's what you have to look forward to. We're going to subject Kevin to a Melissa McCarthy movie.
I will probably review Rock Dog and just do my own episode. But so,
you can do the Rachel McAdams and Rachel Weisz lesbian movie, Disobedience.
There we go. So I will be on
Kevin will be doing a lesbian movie all by himself.
Yeah.
I mean that literally and figuratively. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, the narrator is Tyler Durden.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.